Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Matt Kinnear and Josh Davey, and we are here to talk recruiting. This time, we're going to be focusing on the high school sophomores and juniors. If you want to know more about the seniors, listen to our 2018 podcast that posted last Friday. And if you would like to know more about the college freshmen, well, you clearly haven't been paying attention because that's what the 2017 recruiting issue was all about. We have two podcasts on that from earlier in September, around the time that the recruiting issue came out. This is going to be the wind down session of our recruiting issue podcast content. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about some of the news. And that's really what this podcast is going to be about going forward. Since September 1st, when the 2019s were able to formally make contact with Division I coaches, we've seen a steady build in commitments and other news over the last month, and that has really reached a crescendo over the last week, and I expect October to include a lot more commitments as we head into the fall season. So in my estimation, October is going to be about commitments. November is going to be about events and evaluations. December is going to be about commitments, and then it's going to be lacrosse season again. So that is what you have to look forward to from the IL Recruiting Podcast over the next 2 to 3 months. And let's hit some of the big news this week. First things first, Quinton Buckman announces his commitment to Notre Dame. He is a midfielder from California who had previously been committed to Bryant and then Boston University, and was roundly considered the player of the summer for the explosion that he had on the circuit. All two highlight events were the Under Armour Underclass Games, as well as the Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Invitational July session, which he was playing with Nation United. And really, the book on Buckman is this kid knows how to score. Obviously, his decommitment from Boston University is disappointing to the Terriers, and certainly bolsters a Notre Dame recruiting class that has picked up two other switched commitments since the September 1 date, and went from being probably a little bit of the middle of the road class to now being pretty good. Matt, what are your thoughts on Buckman?
You know, I think you said it best when he just, you know, he flat out scores. He scores in different ways. You know, he can definitely shoot from outside. Really like the best of them. His step down shot, if you give it to him, he's going to get it every time. But, you know, he can also dodge, too. You know, I think he's a great player. Every time I was on the sideline and he was playing, he was the talk of every coach who was on the sideline in terms of what's going to happen to him next, because he blew up so much. Like you said, clearly the player of the summer, going to fit really well at Notre Dame. Huge, huge pickup for them, and kind of more of the same from the Irish. We've seen this kind of be their MO. They own the fact that they flip commits. And they did it with the kind of guy that everyone was seeking this year.
We talked about Griffin Westland last week. You know, this is a Notre Dame class that is really starting to come together, particularly at the offensive end. Prior to these switched commitments, I would say that, you know, two of the hallmarks of this class were going to be reclass PGs. Jake Moss, a midfielder from New Jersey, and Jose Boyer, a long stick midfielder from the Hudson Valley, originally members of the 2017 class. You know, that's the group that we ranked number one and had 14 members in it. So it's been incredibly fruitful for Notre Dame to see that class now start to build momentum behind it with this group. Josh, what are your thoughts on Buckman, and what are your thoughts on this rate of switched commitments that we've seen over the last month or so?
Well, there's no denying he's an unbelievably dynamic player that any coach would want on their team. You know, is there a red flag that you would associate with him that he's switched three different times? I mean, Notre Dame, obviously this is kind of like their MO. They're, you know, making it known that this is kind of a game plan of theirs, but, you know, is it a certainty that he ends up in Notre Dame? I think, obviously, the Irish have a lot to sell, and they, you know, why would you not want to play there with the tradition of the school and football and stuff like that? So my only just concern is this his last landing spot for sure? I mean, you just can't always know, obviously, as things are, you know, getting crazier. But
we're getting close to the NLI date, so really they've got to hold on to him for about 6 or 7 weeks. And then, you know, it's going to be dot on the signature on the line, so to speak, and he's going to be there for at least a year.
Is the NLI date after? What is the NLI date? Is it after the fall recruiting season?
No, it's in the middle of it. So typically it'll be November 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that range. Sometimes it's a week earlier. But, you know, it's going to be within that first, like, 14-day window. It's 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and it's going to be within that early early range of November.
So, mostly, you know, I'd be interested to see if he plays fall ball and if he ends up in any events and stuff like that. But, like, it's great for Notre Dame. They are going to have an unbelievable class. These are guys we've seen a lot. So, Buckman certainly only benefits and makes that class more impressive.
This kid can shoot. I mean, this kid can shoot. And then, Terry, this just kind of builds on – I thought the story you did in the recruiting issue was phenomenal about Notre Dame, and it was referring to their incoming class this year. But just the way that they build recruiting classes is just fascinating and showcases a lot of trends in the sport. And I think you hit the nail on the head, and it's just another example of the way that kids aren't – it's not the same traditional way anymore. Kids come from a variety of sources, whether they're flip commits, whether they're the PG years, you know, whether the kids who transferred high schools. There's a lot of different things that happen to these kids now on the recruiting trail. And Notre Dame is the team that is kind of most symbolic of a lot of that stuff.
And it's going to, you know, we're probably going to talk about this in a more substantial way in a couple minutes, but it's going to happen. Each class year is going to be different from the previous and the following class year for the next 3 years because of the number of players who were committed in each class and how far removed they were from the last time they were able to talk to their coach until the next time. And so for the 2018s, we talked about last week about how the biggest implementation or impact on that group from the recruiting legislation was how much more attention they received. For this 2019 group, it was what happens when you go 5 months without talking to the coach that you committed to? What happens when you get a new round of grades? What happens when you get a new kind of perspective on the summer evaluation? You know, and I think that for the types of decommitments and switch commitments Notre Dame has received, it's a reflection of their approach. There's no question about it. And I think, you know, there's some judgment-based conversations that we can have. I'm not interested in having them right now. There's some, you know, kind of real soul searching, I think, that's going on within these departments, both in terms of their approach, meaning how are we communicating outwardly to prospects? How are we communicating consistently with kids who have committed to us? What is our approach going to be with the whiteboard, so to speak, going forward? Like, do we want to be the first place a kid commits or do we want to be the last? And I think that all those questions are being asked in earnest. It's fascinating to me because, you know, we're 2 years and 4 months removed from when poaching was the cover of the June issue of the 2015 Inside Lacrosse magazine. And when that came out, you know, we had a video associated with it gauging all of the coaches' reactions to poaching, which is a practice that is best described as recruiting players who have verbally committed somewhere else. And the variety of response was wide. Notre Dame was for sure the most willing to say, we do it. And we do it because we are not willing to recruit young players. We're not willing to put the pressure on them. It doesn't serve us because of our admission standards. There's so many different factors at play. By virtue of not recruiting young players, we are not going to take the leftovers. We're, you know, a commitment is whatever it is. A verbal commitment means whatever it means to the person who offered it. And until a player signs an NLI and it becomes against the rules for us to recruit that player, we're going to do it. And, you know, you've seen the benefits of it. And it's not to say that they bat 1,000. You know, I don't know how public this is, but they went after Chris Gray really hard last year, speaking specifically about BU. And the Terrier staff worked really hard to hold on to his commitment. He ended up becoming an Under Armour All-American, and he's going to be a cornerstone for the Terrier offense heading forward. You know, the BU coaching staff worked really hard to hold on to Buckman's commitment as well. And I don't know. I'm not like a, I don't believe in victories in recruiting, right? Like, there are coaches, there are staffs, there are fans who think that we win and lose recruiting battles. I don't see it that way. Recruiting is the first step in your player development cycle. And this is something where, if you truly believe that a kid is making a commitment on the basis of what is the best fit for him, then you try to do your best to clearly communicate what he will receive when he steps on campus. And if he changes his mind about what he wants, you don't lose if he goes somewhere else. That's the way I view it. You know, it's disappointing because you probably deserve a lot of credit for either convincing a player that's traditionally more talented than the type of player you bring in to come to your place, or by identifying someone that has a skill set that other coaches that your peers did not identify. And so to accomplish one of those two things and not have it bear fruit by virtue of having him on your roster is disappointing. But I would argue that it doesn't mean all is lost, because there is benefit to for Boston University for all of this attention that has been paid to Quentin Buchman and the fact that he's going to Notre Dame. Like, there are players who, you know, might traditionally have been pursued by EBU who aren't who but would not have reciprocated, who now are saying, like, oh, well, if it was good enough for him, then it's good enough for me. And I think that while that might not be as direct of a benefit, it is certainly something that suggests that that's a program moving in the right direction. So, you know, when it comes to winning and losing and recruiting, I don't see it that way. And I think that specifically germane to the topic of poaching, it's fascinating to figure out how to manage that concept of winning and losing.
Well, it's a war, not a battle. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to lose kids individually, but it's kind of all about you're gaining ground in bigger ways than just kind of one kid. One kid, no matter how good or bad he is, isn't necessarily going to change your fortune.
This is not basketball.
Right. So it's a matter of which direction you're going in. And BU, clearly, I mean, look at their class that they have right now. You know, Glenn Denning is a great guy. Gray, obviously, you already mentioned him. A great class they got now. Success that they've had. Really good academic kind of profile and location in Boston of all cities is pretty high up there on probably places that lacrosse players want to be. Clearly, they're doing something where they're inching in the right direction.
The other big news from the week: a trio of 2019 defenders commit. Ben Finley, Gonzaga, originally committed Johns Hopkins, flips to Princeton. The other two were first-time verbals. Cole Finley Pons, Denver East, Denver Elite, has been playing lacrosse for two high school seasons, commits to Johns Hopkins. And Cam Henry, originally from Atlanta, plays at the McCallie School, commits to Duke. I mean, three really, really excellent players. We're going to talk about defensemen in a little bit, specifically with respect to this 2019 class, and these guys fit the bill. They're big, they're rangy. Specifically with Henry, he stood out to me once again, an Under Armour and then Nation United Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Invitational July session standout. I watched the West play the South, and he was playing for the South team, and he just immediately popped. He was the player that stood out, you know, most dramatically to me on the field. I know that there were a lot of disappointed coaches that didn't land that commitment, but you know, one of the things that I've heard a number of times since his commitment is, man, he's just a good kid. And so for Duke to land a player like that, you know, it's another boon for the Blue Devils.
I remember watching that game, specifically that game, right next to you, Terry, and just watching pen to paper for a lot of these college coaches. So just bolsters the Duke class even more. You know, it's an impressive class, and adding him makes it that much better. He's the real deal.
So before we move on to a deeper conversation about the 2019s, Josh, you've got some news to fill us in on with respect to what we at Inside Lacrosse are doing here in the next coming weeks and months.
Yeah, so, you know, the summer is over, so it's fall ball time here, not only for the you know, these colleges and universities, but for the Inside Lacrosse staff and, you know, our high school athletes. So, you know, our Inside Lacrosse fall calendar is kicking off October 21st. We'll be in Marietta, Georgia. The IL Southeast Prospect Day, where 2018s through 2021s registration is still open, and there are some spots available still. So make sure you check out insidelacrosse.com/events for more info. Are going to come. College coaches will be in attendance, not only recruiting, but working with our athletes. So we're really excited to head down that way. You know, we've talked about a lot of some kids from the South already in this podcast. So looking forward to hitting the road and being able to check out some more talent. Staying more local here to our offices in Baltimore. We will be hosting two weekends of the Inside Lacrosse Invitational over in Catonsville, UMBC. Actually, I think it's technically Baltimore. But so that'll be awesome for our staff to kind of take the 10-minute drive out there. And we have pretty much sold out. We've got some awesome teams coming from all over the country, including Canada. Really excited about the turnout. Last year was our first time doing it with two weekends this year, the 4th and 5th and the 11th and 12th, both at UMBC. Have about one or two spots left for those interested directors listening in the 2021 class for November 4th and 5th. So other than that, we're pretty much sold out on that one, so that's exciting. And then that same day, November 11th, we will be at Bryant University, one I'm really excited about. We've been at Brown the past couple of years. We're moving over to Bryant. Coach Presser is going to be involved. He's going to be speaking to parents and players about the recruiting process and what he looks for in his own athletes. And historically, that event that we've done up there has drawn, you know, 15 to 20 Division I coaches, has been a top talent. You know, we get some great evaluations and are able to get some eyeballs and some great players, some of those great schools up there, and also some great clubs. You know, you see a lot of those guys, the Eclipses and Tomahawks and Fighting Clams and those guys. So a lot of talent there. Expect to see a lot of coaches. So there are spots available in both of those prospect days, the IL Southeast Prospect Day again, October 21st in Marietta, Georgia, the IL Northeast Prospect Day, November 11th at Bryant University. So make sure you're checking out InsideLacrosse.com, following us at IL Invitational on Twitter for all the info you need to make sure you're being seen, getting noticed, and making your mark in front of these coaches.
Well done. Well done.
Nice. Pat yourself in the back there.
Fist pump.
Let's dive right into this 2019 class. We've already talked about it a little bit, so we can go quickly through this. But we're 5 weeks in from, you know, I estimated that about half the Division One, the available Division One spots were spoken for before the recruiting legislation went into effect in April. Might have been a little bit more than that. We're about 5 weeks removed from the September 1 date. Early impressions, Matt, I'll start with you. What have you seen and what stands out to you with respect to the way in which the 2019 class has been impacted by the rule changes?
Well, I guess there was also that, you know, there's that like almost doomsday clock of like what's going to happen, you know, on September 1st once this actually goes through. And initially it seemed pretty calm, I would say is a fair way to describe that, those first 12 hours. You know, obviously the coaches were making their calls and sending their emails at midnight, you know, as we expected them to. But it was more of a trickle in than it has been, you know, a mass commitment at midnight on September 1st. You know, that didn't happen. You know, part of it is I don't think this class is top to bottom that great. You know, it's not as good as the class kind of above it and behind it. But I think you are now starting to see, after having the benefit of a few weeks of campus visits, you know, you got football season going on. You're seeing those commitments start to really kind of roll in right now. We've talked about this, Terry, about football and how important that is. But, you know, what is the on-campus experience that these coaches are providing these 2019s? Because this is the time that they get to kind of make this decision now and see what it's like on campus, which I think is a great thing that they get to go, you know, maybe a step in the process that they wouldn't have had wouldn't have had in this time of year when it's in the fall, when that's kind of a more true to life college experience. They're getting to experience that, and now these 2019s are starting to commit.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was kind of anxious to see what was going to happen, whether, you know, we were talking about a lot in the office, whether at midnight there were just going to be 45 commitments that just came through. We were going to get 45 emails that, hey, all these kids have committed right away, and that certainly wasn't the case. And I think, you know, to the points that have been made earlier and on previous podcasts, that the 2018 class, these coaches have had so much more time to watch those guys now that they're able to really have a better understanding of their own needs. And because the class is not as competitive, like you mentioned, Matt, you know, allows them to focus a little bit more on what they actually do need. Is this 18 that I have, you know, he's going to come in and play right away, so maybe I don't need that extra defenseman. So I think that coaches are still trying to figure out exactly what their own needs are, just like they, you know, that's what their job is. But, you know, it was so unprecedented that I don't really think I had a, you know, a really crazy hot take or reaction on it. I just was excited to see how it was going to shake out. And, you know, I think it's been great. I think we can tell for the most part, you know, that coaches abided by the rules and that, it seems that they're taking their time trying to figure out what makes the most sense. I'm sure there were some cases where, you know, coaches and club directors were reached out to, but I think that would have been more the case. We would have seen more of those commitments come in right on September 1st. So, yeah, it was unprecedented, but I think it's probably for the better of the players the way it's shaken out.
Well, last week we worked our way from top to bottom when we talked about the rankings. This week I want to start right at the top. Our number one recruit in the class of 2019, Connor Schellenberger, originally committed to Johns Hopkins, switched to Virginia last October. He's rated an 87 in our recruiting database. Josh, what do you think of Connor Schellenberger?
He's the man. He's awesome. I remember watching him, you know, play for St. Anne's Belfield down in Charlottesville. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do with Bullis this year. He just adds to the loaded talent that they have down there. But he's just a creative player. He can shoot the ball like anyone can shoot the ball. And he's just smart, and he's a heady kid. I think that he's another guy who, you know, he's a Virginia commit who goes there and, you know, similar to the Doc Sakins and Ryan Conrads, and comes in and he's able to contribute right away. So he's just a guy, like you said, similar to Buckman, you want to have on your team. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does this coming high school season.
Yeah, I mean, shooter is the thing that comes to mind right away when you talk about him. But, you know, he came up here for a photo shoot for the recruiting issue of the magazine. You know, we had to do a photo shoot of him in his Bullis jersey shortly after he transferred. And, you know, I got to speak with him a little bit. And really, you get a sense of his intelligence, you know, his lacrosse intelligence, but, you know, just his overall demeanor and a lot about him just from, you know, able to have a conversation with him. And he is one of these kids who, you know, this 19 class has experienced the new recruiting roles. So, you know, he was, you know, at St. Anne's, you know, playing high school games, you know, there's the Virginia coaching staff is in town and, you know, he couldn't talk to them. He described that, you know, it was clear he couldn't, you know, go and say, hey, you know, Lars, you know, let's talk about what I'm going to do when I get there, you know.
And hit a tennis ball from St. Anne's Belfield to the campus of
University. Exactly. So, you know, he's one of these guys who's under these new recruiting rules. Great kid. He's a shooter. He's going to make a huge impact at Virginia.
Yeah, to me, it's speed. You know, I think about him in the context of ex-attackmen, particularly in the classes preceding him. And in contrast to a guy like Joey Epstein, who I think last week we compared to Shaq Stanwyck, with Schellenberger, he's kind of a – this is such a strong comparison. I'm going to back myself into a corner here, but he's kind of like a bigger Jordan Wolf. And I say that he's not as fast as Jordan Wolf, but he runs at an angle to the crease that puts defensemen on their heels when it comes to having to make a decision about, are you going to try to shut the door or are you going to try to push him upfield? And to me, that is the skill. It's kind of like if you're a basketball player, are you a shooter or do you drive, you know, are you the type of player who's going to beat your man and get to the hole? Schellenberger is a driver and he makes problems for defenses because he has an elite level skill, and that's what it is. And when you're his age, having that arrow in your quiver helps to build the rest of your game around. And so, you know, that combined with his height, to me, is why he's a justifiable pick at number one. And obviously his story to get to the point where he's at, you know, between his commitments and now transferring as a high schooler, you know, it's really fascinating. And he represents, you know, in the same way that Notre Dame represents some of these storylines of recruiting, you know, Connor individually represents some of the storylines in terms of developing as a prospect, as a recruit. So it's certainly an interesting story. And now, as you know, he's kind of become the consensus best player in his class, it'll be just really fascinating to see how his story develops. For me, when I look at this group, you know, we've talked about the group at large, but the, you know, kind of second layer, before we start talking about classes, the second layer of this group that really stands out to me is big physical defensemen. And when you look at our rankings, it's reflected in the back half of the top 10. Number 6, Scott Bauer from Episcopal School in Dallas, heading to Virginia. Number 8, Kenny Brower from Massapequa on Long Island, heading to Duke. Number 9, Clay Lanham from Georgetown Prep, heading to North Carolina. Number 10, Will Frisoli from St. Sav's, heading to Harvard. Frisoli is a little bit of an outlier, I think, with respect to his overall physical profile, but those three at the top, man, you know, we talked about it last week, 6'3", 6'4", 185 to 200 pounds, you know, run very vertical, but have good lateral movement, able to stay in front of guys, know how to throw checks. It's a prototype, and, you know, I'm not saying that the 2019 class is exceptional with respect to the volume of this, but we started this podcast talking about three guys who, you know, Finley Pons doesn't necessarily fit this, but the other two do in terms of their athletic profile. So now, you know, it feels like if you're looking for a tall athletic defenseman in the class of 2019 and you're an elite-level program, you're probably going to be able to find one.
Yeah, and Terry, you know, as part of this process, you mentioned how, you know, it takes longer for defensemen to get noticed. How much quickly how much quicker do you think we notice the big, tall defensemen? And, like, how quickly do those guys kind of jump off the page and maybe the guys who maybe are more skilled but aren't as big, you know, as a fault of scouting from people like us, don't get noticed quite as quickly. But, you know, I think the guys you mentioned have it all in terms of the skill set, but also the size and the meanness. You know what I mean? And that's what I like to see in these guys. I want them to be mean when they're this age.
And to your point, you know, you can't teach size. So, no, it's they obviously are going to stand out because a coach can get them on campus and teach them footwork and some of those things they need to improve on. Clay Lanham's a guy who, to your point, I think it was the 2015 Inside Lacrosse Recruiting Invitational. Had some rain. We ended up over at John Carroll, and I remember watching Clay Lanham. He was a one-man clear, just going down the field. He was uncommitted that time, committed to UNC very shortly after that event.
One of the first commits in his class. I think he was third.
I think you're right, yeah. So he's been on the map for a little while, and he's an awesome player. I'm looking forward to Georgetown perhaps coming to weekend one of our Inside Lacrosse recruiting, or weekend two of our Inside Lacrosse fall invitational. So looking forward to seeing him. Another guy I'll just hit on is Hank Bethel, who's a defender. Could be an offensive lineman, probably, at Gilman. One of his coaches at Gilman, Chris Garland, raves about him, not only just by the kind of person he is, the kind of player he is, but he's an unbelievable person as well. And he's a guy, when you watch Gilman play, I mean, people just stay away from him. He's got his footwork, he definitely can improve, but for how large he is, I mean, he could be the left tackle for the Ravens right now. His footwork can obviously improve, but he is a force, and he puts people on their butts anytime they come into his area.
The one that really sticks out to me is Parker Byrd. You know, he's the guy that I really like in this group. Saw him really close at the Under Armour games. Big fan of his game. And also, like you said, he doesn't kind of fit this archetype that we're talking about right now, but Will Frizzoli is a great player.
Well, so let's move on and talk about some of the classes. We're not necessarily ranking classes here, but more talking about groups that have come together and are worthy of note. One that stands out to me is Ohio State. This has been a group that they've had their eye on for a really long time. Kind of the next level, the next advancement of Ohio State's recruiting prowess, the Dream 19 concept, Nick Myers and his staff, you know, really taking I would call it a more holistic approach and also joining the early, you know, the players in early recruiting. And so, you know, the group has four guys that were ranked in our top 50. James Cipolla, number 34, Jacob Snyder, number 23, Christian Tomei, number 20, and Grant Mitchell, number 18. I'm really fond of three additional players in this group, Elijah Black, Connor Mitchell, and Mitchell Pelkey. And so, you know, this Ohio State group is going to be a really interesting addition when they arrive on campus. The class of 2017 was a very strong one for the Buckeyes. You know, a couple Under Armour All-Americans. Certainly Justin Anasio is going to be a freshman that a lot of people pay attention to because of potential to received the torch from another Canadian faceoff specialist. But this group, I think, is a little bit more all the way around and a little bit more traditional in where some of the players are coming from. You got, you know, a pair of brothers who are midfielders at Calvert Hall. There's a lot of skill in this group. I'm fascinated to see kind of how it comes together.
Pelkey, I like him a lot too, and I'm glad you mentioned him. Every time I've seen him play, he's made a tough play. You know, he's just made like some sort of hard nose play that, you know, I know Coach Myers is going to love.
Yeah, he tore it up for Sweelax two summers ago, winning the 2019 championship at the Inside Lacrosse Invitational. So he's a guy we've seen. He's a player for sure.
A group that's emerged on the radar a little bit recently would be Princeton. Mentioned Ben Finley's commitment not too long ago. They also had three players ranked in this class: Bear Lockshin, Tyler Sandoval, and number 7, Alex Slusher, an attackman from the Episcopal School in Oregon. Just the Tigers are putting some together, and I'm really fascinated by it because, you know, they've done it amid a coaching change, and they've done it without being dominant in the Ivy League. And so, you know, to get this infusion of talent, it's Princeton, right? It's not like, you know, it's not like it's the most difficult place in the world to recruit to. That being said, relative to what they had been doing, you know, where, say, for the five preceding years, it had been maybe star-heavy, one or two, you know, your Zach Currier, Riley Thompson types, and then maybe a little bit of a gap between them and the next part of the group. This is a little bit more fleshed out.
Princeton, you know, they love these big defensemen at Princeton. You know, I know Coach Madden loves these guys. They got a few of them on campus already. And, you know, you mentioned the coaching change, but the thing is, you know, Coach Madeline recruited guys who are on campus already, and he's been the guy who's been in contact with these kids, you know, through their recruiting process. So the transition for these guys, you know, obviously they saw the head coach, you know, get let go, and that's something that's always kind of alarming for a future prospect. But their main point of contact is still there, and he's the head coach now. So that's got to bode well for them. And Terry, you mentioned, you know, all the positives of Princeton, the 19 class and the future ones. You know, as these kids maybe have some more time, that means grades can get better. They can get into these Ivy League schools. Is Princeton going to be one of these teams that we're going to see kind of benefit from this recruiting legislation?
Well, it's interesting because I think one of the consensuses has been, big football schools were going to benefit because high school juniors are going to arrive on campus. There's going to be a big home football game and their jaws are going to drop. Michigan is an example of something like that. But I am a believer in the point that you make, which is a high school junior might be a little bit more, you know, less susceptible to flash, more interested in the substantive components of the rest of his life than a freshman or sophomore would be. So while when you're a freshman and sophomore, you weren't getting the full show of the glitz and glamour of being at a place that has big time college football, it's probably offset by understanding, like, you know, the opportunity to play in an Ivy League or play at a service academy is going to set me up for the rest of my life in a way that, you know, not very many other programs can offer. So I would argue that at this point, it's a push-pull or a draw, you know, and we'll just have to wait and see how it kind of sorts itself out. Moving on, I mentioned a service academy, and I was impressed. You know, I think that Henry Rentz's commitment to Navy is kind of the baseline for this conversation, but when you include Bryson Ray, who's also a top 50 commit heading to that's going to become a midshipman, it just continues this story of the quality job that Rick Soule, Ryan Wellner, and the rest of the staff there are doing and bringing in folks. Matt, I know you're pretty familiar with this group and their approach. What do you take away from what Navy has put together in the class of 2019?
You know, they've got a little bit of everything in the class. And, you know, you mentioned the job that they do. It's been probably, 4 years of really, really good classes in a row for Navy. And I think you're starting to see the dividends of kind of the way that they approach every year. They're going to be a little bit better in terms of their recruiting class. They're consistent in their approach, and the product that they put out on the field, obviously last year was a little bit of a blip on their radar maybe, but you know, it's going to continue to pay dividends, and this is a great class, and you know, the 18 class is a great class, and presumably the 20 class will be a great class too.
20s have a couple of highly ranked kids. We'll get to that a little bit later. Josh, you're familiar with Henry Rentz, originally from Thayer Academy, transferred to the Severance School. What do you know about him?
I know that talking to Coach Stu Kern, who's the head coach at Thayer this summer, he is super bummed, to say the least, to lose him. And also catching up with former Severance coach Jamie McNeely this summer, he is super bummed that he's not going to have the opportunity to coach him. So he's a guy, his family's moving to Annapolis, and I think, you know, who coming down, playing at Thayer, who played some great competition, but now being in the MIA is going to seriously, his name will be much more familiar with our readers and our listeners, because he's a guy that's going to get a pull every single game and comes in. And Severn, who, you know, not to get into too much of the Annapolis landscape, but they're losing some players to Severna Park, who's an up-and-coming, you know, public school, won the state championship, undefeated, was ranked in our Under Armour IL rankings this past year. He's a game changer for them and someone that, you know, their new coach can build around moving forward. So they took a step back last year, Severn, but Henry Rentz comes in and changes the way that team plays lacrosse.
Last thing I want to talk about in the class of 2019 is who's the best class. And I think Maryland got off to an early lead. They brought in a lot of really high-profile players in this group with a couple of the first commitments, guys like Bryson Shaw,
Logan McNanny,
who was probably, I think, the first goalie that committed in this group. And then Duke has made a really substantial run with this group, you know, bringing in some commitments more recently. We talked about Cam Henry, and he's, you know, a late addition to a group that I think has 9 guys in it right now. So, you know, do you guys have anything to add? Do you have a strong opinion about which
Duke has athletes? And they have athletes on campus now. They have athletes coming the next few years, and that 19 class has athletes too. I give the nod to the athletes at this point.
I completely concur. Looking at some of these other names, Connor Drake, Jake Caputo, Christian Mulet. I mean, these are names that we've heard about for a while, guys that have dominated their respective schools and in the club circuit. So, you know, shout out to Coach Janowski. He's doing something right down
to
there.
To Terry's earlier point, though, don't sleep on Princeton as having a top five class here.
Well, let's move on and talk about the 2020s. They're the current high school sophomores. The thing about this group in total that stands out to me is there were 55 ranked players or watch list additions, and 17 of them are uncommitted. So for the what I believe is a proper narrative that there are roughly 100 players in this class that were committed before the recruiting legislation came down, you know, that's a pretty sizable percentage. I mean, it's about 30% of the group. Of what is considered to be the best players in the class is uncommitted. And so, you know, like I said, every year is going to be unique in a 4-year window from 18 to 21 in terms of, but it's going to be September 1 of 2020 before we get two successive years of what this recruiting legislation means for how coaches are going to approach that date. Presumably it could be longer, but at least, what do you guys make of that? What do you think of, I guess, and the other side of it too is, what's it like to evaluate and what's it like to try to rank players when, you know, so a lot of times you can reverse engineer it. These players are committed here, and so they're good. Now, when you're looking at a pool of uncommitted players, it's like, well, we're going to trust our own judgment. We're going to trust, you know, the cumulative word of what we're hearing from coaches and understand that, you know, there are going to be some late emergers from this group.
I definitely think there is an aspect, you said the reverse engineering. I think there's an aspect of all of these evaluation, you know, whether it's a coach or someone like us, or, you know, there is that aspect of, once a guy kind of gets on the radar, he might unnecessarily, or he commits, he might unnecessarily stay high up on that radar, because people, their eye goes to that person because they know he's committed to Syracuse. They know he's committed to Maryland or Hopkins or North Carolina, one of these schools. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling thing there, where that keeps getting the write-ups and keeps getting the attention. I think this is going to kind of help diversify who people look at, and really these kids are going to have to work to get noticed for their entire, you know, high school and club careers, to kind of, at least from our perspective, from the media perspective there, you know, to get some attention, because we're not going to have that well, this is the UNC guy, so, you know, we're at least going to have an eye on him. We're not going to have that going into this.
I think you got to, you know, whereas before, we talk about, like, the power of the club director, and now that the coaches, the college coaches cannot connect with them, you know, as much as they used to, I think they relied on them a lot for, okay, this guy's, you know, he was 19 for 20 faceoffs in this tournament in the summer. You know, what is his, is he going to start at this high school next year? You know, I think that ability also makes it even that much harder too, is because I think the college coaches relied on that input from people who have access to these players obviously much more than they are able to. I think to your point, Matt, it's just people, their kids are going to have to show out. The showcase and these summer events are that much more important, and not only that, but it's the consistency. You know, how consistent are you? Are you an all-star kid in every single one of these events? Are you scoring this many goals? And some of these kids are, for sure, and I know we'll dive into this list a little bit more, but it's a tough job. It's one I don't.
And, I mean, coaches are still going to watch these kids throughout the process. You know, obviously we saw, you know, I think this year we saw a little bit less of watching the 2020s. But, you know, it's not like a coach is not going to, like, catch up with you until the summer before your commitment. He's still going to have his charts on you and his data and his visits from when he's seen you. So it's certainly a similar process in the sense that you're still going to have to bring it.
Well, I want to talk about the top of this group. There's one thread that ties together the top three players. They all played in the Under Armour underclass.
These three players are awesome.
Championship game. Two of them attackmen from Long Island, both Team 91 Crush members, Xavier Arline and Brennan O'Neill. Arline attends Shoreham Wading River. O'Neill attends St. Anthony's. And then number two, sandwiched right between them, Brennan Grimes from Boys Latin, plays for Loonies. All three of these players are committed. Arline's going to Carolina. Grimes is going to Ohio State. O'Neill is going to Penn State, which is, in its own right, an interesting distribution of talent based on where we've seen the top three players in each class go previously. What do you got, Matt? You were at this game.
The guy I want to talk about is Grimes, because he scored or assisted on 8 goals in a row in this Baltimore versus Long Island game. He, you know, I certainly think O'Neill is the sure thing, number one pick in this class. The thing that really impressed me about Grimes was that Baltimore team was lost, and he just put the team on its back and scored from so many different places. You know, he was operating kind of from more up top in that game, more kind of from the wing and then up top. He showed a lot of versatility. He, you know, I think someone who did an evaluation of him on our website compared it to Pat Spencer, I think that was G-Shan, and that's a very apt description of how good he is. You know, I really like him. He's a great lefty. He's got some range, but he can also dodge, and he can, you know, dodge very physically if he needs to. Really love this kid. You know, I think kind of the way that we saw him add versatility to his game, even from his high school year to the end of this summer, you know, just in this kind of 6-month span, was really incredible. So, you know, if he takes another similar leap, he's going to be an incredible player in college.
I think it's cool having our top two players both being lefty attackmen. I think it's pretty cool. You know, coaches are recruiting. That's one thing they always, you know, we have to have a lefty, you know, attackman on our offense. And to talk about Arline, he's just one of the smartest players and most creative players at the same time. He runs up and down the field, can play defense as well. I've definitely seen him take faceoffs before. But just the motor on this kid is absurd. And I think he's only going to get better. His athleticism is off the charts. So, you know, while O'Neill and Grimes are, you know, deservingly 1 and 2, our line is, you know, not far behind by any means.
The thing I like about him, the thing that concerns me is his size. The thing I like about him is his springiness. You know what I mean? It's like this manner of running in which explosiveness is easy because it's almost like you just have this unfair advantage in your fast twitch muscles where, like, you're immediately moving, you know, in a way that, like, the rest of us are not. And that, you know, whether it's from a standstill or a change of direction, it manifests itself every single time he's on the field. It's not simply, you know, when he's involved in an offensive possession. And I think that that's a special skill and the type of thing that's always going to be able to find a home on the field.
Definitely. And O'Neill, man, we talked about him. He's just, you know, we talked about how certain guys just kind of draw your eye, and he's just the guy that you could be 20 feet away from the field going to the sidelines, and you kind of already just see him, and like, and your eye is already drawn
to
him.
He's like Greg Pike, but for a totally different reason.
Yeah. So really excited to see him, and I mean, that's a great group. I'm excited for the 2020 class.
I'll hit you with a solid transition, if I can, Terry, from that Brendan Grimes team. That Looney's team, that 2020 Looney's team is absolutely stacked. So you just look at some of these other players on that team. Gable Braun is a face-off kid from McDonough who's on that team, who is a North Carolina commit. And then I actually just found out, I'll go Adam Schefter, per my sources, that Peyton Giberson, who is the Maryland face-off commit this year, formerly of Team 91 Maryland, is now also going to be playing for that Looney's team. So I don't know how much action you know, some of these defensemen for Looney's are going to get, because I don't think that team is not going to have the ball. Brendan Grimes is going to score a ton of goals. So that Looney's team, if you're out there and can see them, catch them this fall or this summer, that team, I mean, from top to bottom, they can ball, man.
Is this Looney's team and the Team 91 team the greatest rivalry in lacrosse right now?
There's some serious high-level lacrosse being played at that 2020 level.
I mean, one of the groups I like in that is the PBL. We've seen them play. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the opposite. They're so good defensively. You know, Tommy Drago is a pole that gets up and down the field, and Gabe Craven is a goalie that's committed to Navy, and he's awesome. So I don't know, man. It's not a totally, like, one-sided, or, you know, like, I wouldn't say that the 2020 crown has been decided in terms of which is the best club to come through that class.
And BBL, Byron Collins taking a role with them. You know, that's going to certainly add a great lacrosse mind there, too.
And then just sticking with the theme of, you know, great clubs that have 2020s, New Hampshire Tomahawks, Sean Cameron, little brother of Brian Cameron, who's an 18, who was high ranked on our list, is in a midi. I think he also plays attack. It's going to Maryland. And Nathan Laliberte, I might be butchering his last name, is a face-off kid who dominated at our IL Invitational this 2 summers ago as well. So there was a lot. This 2020 class, I mean, we're talking about ranking class in terms of talent. I think, you know, after, you know, the class that were just freshmen, and then the 2018 class, the 2020 class seems far off, but there's some serious talent here, and I'm looking forward to some of these kids getting even better.
Well, you can stay up to date on all of that with the Inside Lacrosse recruiting database. It changes every single day, whether it's a new commitment or a new evaluation. We've got some new features classes, meaning college classes, meaning every college broken down by the players in each class year going to that program. As evaluations come in, this is going to continue to take shape. It's a dynamic tool. It's, you know, it offers so much. We're so excited about it. And not only is the content being enhanced every day, so are the features, so much being added to it, tons of video getting poured in. You know, check out insidelacrosse.com/recruiting for everything you need to know about what's going on in the recruiting world. And until next week, have a good one.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.